All right, we all recording?
Yes, we are.
Recording.
Looking good. Count it down live one more time. 3, 2, 1, go.
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 Close enough.
Amber did not say go. She is off the show. We'll never have her back or speak of her. Goodbye, everybody.
And that was the last woman they had on the show.
This is what happens when you have them on.
Yeah, what do you expect? We can't, I mean, come on. We have to have some expectations that people can say go.
Sorry.
Gangnam Style.
Hello, Grey Wolves. It's episode 25, in which we will be discussing Lady Ghostbusters with special guest Amber Ali Frost. Amber, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great. Thank you for having me on.
Like I said, we will be breaking down the cultural flashpoint that is Lady Ghostbusters. But before we do that, let's just introduce ourselves in case you forgot. It's me, Will Meneker, with Felix Biederman.
Hey, everybody.
And Matt Chrisman.
Hello.
So like I said, there's much to discuss about the Lady Ghostbusters movie and all of the controversy surrounding it. Before we get into that, I just was hoping, Matt, that you could give us all just a little preview of our next show's coverage of the Republican National Convention, because you were on the ground in Cleveland on Monday doing some boot leather reporting. Can you give us a little snippet of things to come?
Well, I spent most of the day at a park right next to the Cuyahoga River in the flats in Cleveland, probably 2 miles away from the Quicken Loans Arena, at a Alex Jones-sponsored, quote-unquote, unity rally that was actually called America First. So, you know, boom, right there on the nose. Milo was there. Alex Jones, of course, headlined. Everyone's favorite black conservative, Wayne Dupree, was there. A collection of scam artists and aspiring politicos came on and ranted. And most humorously enough of all, I'm fairly certain that there was at least one reporter for every person who actually attended the thing.
We're going to have Brian Quimby on for our next show to discuss the Republican National Convention. But the one thing I want to ask you about is Tucker Carlson ducked his head inside your car, Matt?
He did, yes.
He was soliciting.
Basically. We were driving past the big hotel complex thing and past this alley that had a bunch of election-related gewgaws and spectacle that we hope to go to tomorrow when we go back. And we were moving at a very slow pace because it was getting near rush hour, and I saw this douchebag in a suit talking on a cell phone, and I was like, that's Tucker Carlson. And Brian looked and he was like, "Yo, my God, that is Tucker Carlson." So we got our phones because we wanted to, you know, we were basically playing Pokemon there, trying to catch him. I got a lot of Pokemon. I got a Chris Hayes Azard. I got Jeb Lundichu. I got a lot of barely tethered to reality mons. So we get our phones out and he sees us take our phones out, and he just walks over to the thing and he goes, "What are you guys doing?" And Brian says, taking pictures. And he goes, of what? And he says, of you people.
You people.
And Carlson, yeah. And Carlson, like, bends in and he's like, oh, you want a picture, huh? And so Brian tries to do, you know, a selfie, and he, like, has a little trouble. It takes him a second to get the thing front-facing. And so, of course, Tucker starts negging him. And he's like, how old are you? You don't know what you're doing. And then Yeah, he's just being, he was being an alpha frat douche. And then, yeah, Brian got a photo, and then he split. He was wearing, I was thrown for a bit because he was wearing a regular tie. He wasn't wearing one of his fancy lad bow ties.
Oh,
so that's
really?
Why for a second, I
that's
actually thought it was him at first.
Bitch.
I honestly was like, oh, wait a minute, he's got a regular tie on. That's not Tucker Carlson. And then we got closer, like, oh, I guess he decided to mix it up.
Variety is the spice of life, you know?
Also, beating up gay people in bathrooms, also the spice of life.
Yeah, that's my favorite Tucker Carlson thing. For people that don't know, Tucker Carlson claimed to have assaulted a gay person who came on to him in a bathroom. But if you look at Tucker Carlson, he has the inbreeding that only rich people do, and I think if he ever tried to throw a punch in his life, like, his fucking shoulder would come out of its socket.
His brother's name is Buckley. These clearly are people who, like, budded off of some fungus in a basement, you know, in, like, Chappaqua or something.
There's something, going back to the names, there's something about when you pass a certain level of wealth, I don't know if it's, like, 50 million or 100 million, you start naming your children exactly as you would your dogs.
Well, I mean, yeah, the obvious example of that is Gretchen Carlson with her children Yates, Yardley, and Thatcher.
Oh, yeah. God.
Oh,
that's
God.
Terrible.
Or like William F. Buckley named his dog Sebby, which could easily be a Carlson brother or cousin. We all agreed on Sebby's excellence.
Well, but before we go too far down this rabbit hole, let's refocus on the reason that we're all here today, which is to discuss the Lady Ghostbusters. And I think the easiest segue is, Matt, you mentioned you saw Milo at the Alex Jones rally on Monday.
I did. I mean, he was being, as usual, flooded by just ass-kissing incel dorks. And he had and he was doing his damnedest to appear not to be disgusted by it. All of them.
Did he do the hover hand on any of them?
Well, he would stand next to them, and he was very dutiful. Like, somebody would step up to him and he'd be like, okay, this is the next one. And he would sort of like hold himself to avoid contact. He was very not touchy at all. He tried to keep a distance, which I understand. I mean, those guys all had like at least a quarter inch layer of grease on them.
Yeah, no, but this is the thing though. Lady Ghostbusters is the film that finally got Milo permanently banned from Twitter. I mean, this movie's been out, like, I feel like, okay, so, like, as soon as this movie was announced, I feel like there's been this bullshit controversy about it that, you know, I think we mostly regard as a marketing ploy from the Sony PR department. But, like all bullshit, it has to be based in some small amount of truth, which is this kind of, I don't know, nerd backlash against remaking the, you know, classic Ghostbusters with an all-female cast. And this is the thing that just this week, one of the lead actresses in Lady Ghostbusters, Leslie Jones, was the target of one of Milo's little attention-grabbing stunts and received a avalanche of, you know, nasty Twitter harassment and abuse, mostly of a racist and sexist variety. And the outcry over that was such that Twitter finally dropped the hammer on Milo and took away his entire account, not just his check mark. So,
R.I.P. Hero. He's with Harambe in heaven now. But you talk about how much of the Ghostbusters controversy was ginned up as a publicity stunt, and it totally was, but it's just so interesting to see how both sides in this thing need each other.
It's a kind of reactionary feminism. We don't really have anything to sort of throw ourselves behind right now, so we get stuck on these sort of cultural representation campaigns that are, you know, virtually meaningless to nearly everyone in the world, but you know, we treat them like they're like this life or death situation, and it's insane. It's completely insane.
And it's made up, but at the same time, there are guys like Milo who also, for their own relevancy to continue, need these things to happen so they could be on the other side of it.
Yeah, there was a BuzzFeed listicle that I was showing to Will yesterday. It was a 12 12 ways you can support the Lady Ghostbusters. They didn't call it Lady Ghostbusters. That's just what it's called in my head
for the
now.
Purposes, no, for the purposes of our show, the film is called, the title of the movie is Lady Ghostbusters.
I think we've all decided that.
I have this article up in front of me right now, and I think this is a good gateway into our discussion. This is by Alana Bennett. She's a BuzzFeed staff writer, and the title of it is 12 Ways You Can Support the New Ghostbusters Movie Against the Hate Campaign. And now, Amber, you looked into this, and this is not a sponsored post. This isn't one of their native advertising things.
I kept looking for the little sponsored post thing. It's not that. It's amazing. These women are working for free for, like, this, you know, multi-million
dollar... For the Sony PR department.
Yeah, it's insane. And eventually the advice just kind of adds up to, you know, go see the movie and, you know, talk about how good it is online. You know, like, basically, like, form an organic street team for this Hollywood summer blockbuster.
I hear the feminist Ghostbuster partisans are sending people in with suicide vests to the Jason Bourne movie.
Ghostbuster fans swim like fish through the sea of the peasantry.
It's insane. It became this thing before the movie, and this was way before the movie came out too, where it was like, you know, it was equivocated with activism or organizing in some way. It was like, you go see the Lady Ghostbuster movies as like a, you know, equivalent to sitting at a lunch counter in segregated Mississippi. It's completely insane, and people have bought into it, and it's become this weird back and forth between like five basement troll guys and like this roaring online feminism reacting to the basement trolls.
Wait, I mean, I haven't seen this movie, but are you guys saying that a bunch of cynical liberals use consumptionist politics because they can't face any inconvenience that causes them to live their lives any different, and they internalize all their consumer choices as actions because they don't have any beliefs? I'm Hamilton!
Well, of the 12 ways that you can support Ghostbusters, probably half of them involve just giving your money to the Ghostbusters franchise.
Give your money to Lady Ghostbusters.
And the other half involves spending your time marketing Ghostbusters.
For free.
Let's go through a couple of them. The number one way you can support Lady Ghostbusters is go see the damn movie. So yeah, buy a ticket. My favorite is number two, go see it multiple times if you have the means. I like that they have the caveat, if you have the means, you know, because they don't want to be like, you know, goading people. Yeah, they don't want to be goading people of like, you know, low income into seeing Ghostbusters multiple times.
I had to move out of my apartment into my car, but it was worth it because I saw Ghostbusters 15 times.
You're a freedom fighter. Yeah.
Number three is bring your friends, get other people to spend money on the movie. Number four is make the theater as rowdy and supportive as a bunch of drunk girls in a bar bathroom, a.k.a. the pinnacle of supportive fun times.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what everyone wants in a movie, a fucking bachelorette party.
Yeah.
Number four is specifically designed to make Rod Dreher's friend N-Word go insane.
These guys are being snarky. I haven't seen the movie yet, but when I see the movie, ladies, I want you to feel safe. Take your shoes off. Wear open-toed shoes. Just put those doggies in the air. Just, come on, completely barefoot, ladies. Let's have fun. Let's make this supportive.
Another one of my favorites is number seven. Make a hashtag to counteract the hatred. And they recommend a few. Like, go see Ghostbusters. Support Ghostbusters. Or something salty and misandrist, like Ballbusters?
That'll show them.
How about this? Guys, check it out. All ghosts matter.
Ooh.
This is actually good. Number eight is remind people that Donald Trump also publicly maligned the women-led Ghostbusters. And this is really good because I had never seen this. It's a real Donald Trump Instagram video, and he's sitting in his office and he goes,
"They're remaking Indiana Jones without Harrison Ford. You can't do that. And now they're making Ghostbusters with only women. What's going on?"
This is tailor-made for us, guys. You ready for this? Number 11 is give again, caveat, I'm not making this up. Number 11 is give in to the pressures of capitalism and buy the shit out of the merch and tie-in food stuff.
Hell yeah.
Who are these women who are like, you know what? I need some Ghostbusting merch.
I want that Ecto Cooler juice box.
You know, I ate the slime filled Ghostbusters Twinkies until I got type 2 diabetes, but I feel like these stumps they're marks of pride.
When my wife is going on a date with one of her boyfriends, yes, more Polly, make your jokes. I am using my special made Ghostbusters Kristen Wiig model fleshlight to support the movie, to support myself, and so if you don't like that, you can go take a hike.
Well, I feel they missed the beat with this, like, you know, plug for the Hi-C Ecto Cooler juice box, you know, because this is you know, aimed at, you know, an adult market, but they should have been like make a Ghostbusters cocktail, sneak in hotel sized bottles of vodka into the theater, and do a little mixer with the Ecto Cooler Hi-C, get drunk, get rowdy with your lady friends,
adulting like a boss. Oh, I love it.
And then finally, number 12. Lay waste to their childhood with joy. Dance through all the male tears.
Yes. That's what I like the most. That's what I like the most, by the way, about Operation Cast Lead. Laying waste to all those childhoods.
My favorite thing about this, about the appositional thing, is that at least on a few websites, they've decided to call these phantom haters. They exist, but as usual online, it's 15 dorks.
Sure.
And they're calling them ghost bros.
Oh, come on.
Fuck you.
Which, well, to me, also, that's just, that makes it seem perfect.
Like ghosts aren't real, so right. You're kind of, I mean, yeah, that's...
Well, they're giving away the game. It's like, maybe you're admitting that this is all an oppositional fantasy you've created to ratify your own selfish preferences.
No, the BuzzFeed one was pretty peak, but there was actually another one that I liked even better from the All, and I can't even remember what it was called, but it was when Bernie was still pretty viable as a potential, you know, whatever. As viable as he ever was, anyway. And it was a satirical piece, and like the conceit of it was like, oh, I'm the guy who, it's not because they're lady Ghostbusters, it's because I have issues with cinema funding or something like that. And his argument was that, you know, the ghost bros were the same guys as the Bernie bros, and they were trying to argue that there are no legitimate objections you could have to this movie or to Hillary Clinton without, you know, actually having like a sexist subtext to it. Which was like weird because I liked the metaphor from the other side. It was like I was totally on his side. I'm like, yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I do think we are favoring representation over substance here. Okay, you're arriving at different conclusions than I am, and also you work for the All, which, as far as I know, still doesn't pay its writers, so that says something about you. It was, of course, a male feminist. All male feminist.
The most powerful kind.
Oh, like, my God.
To be fair, Bernie did come out against... That was actually, like, when he announced his candidacy. He announced that he was against female Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
He got up on stage, and he was like, "You can't hunt a ghost if you're bleeding from your vagina." It's ridiculous.
Well, I think we've already...
That was a low moment in his campaign. Yeah.
Not a good look.
Well, I think we've already proved that it, in fact, is impossible to critique Lady Ghostbusters without being sexist. But I think we should discuss the film itself now.
Totally.
Yeah, because it's worth... We need to do an analysis of the text itself. I have seen the movie. Amber has seen the movie.
Well, and I saw it together.
I have seen the movie.
Mm-hmm. Felix has
actually
not seen the movie.
I have to admit that I fought for my gender here. I did not pay to see Lady Ghostbusters. I paid to see The Shallows with Blake Lively. And then I went in and saw Ghostbusters instead. Well, first I watched the last half of Independence Day, then I snuck in to see Ghostbusters.
Well, so
I did not give my money to those women. I didn't do it.
Why are you confessing to federal crimes on our show, Matt?
Well,
you gave your money to Blake Lively.
Matt, I'd be curious to know your assessment of the film.
It was not that good.
Yes.
I mean, it was a pretty generic, obvious attempt to create a franchise.
It's not a good movie, you guys. It's just not a good movie.
And the funny thing is that its badness is very banal. It has not bad because there's women in it. It's not
spectacularly bad.
No. I honestly think I figured out why it doesn't work at a fundamental level. And it's pretty basic. This movie is directed by Paul Feig, right? And he has made some actually good female-centered comedies, like Bridesmaids and Spy, which I like a lot. And he butted off of the sort of master host body of Judd Apatow, who has also made some movies that I have enjoyed a great deal. And the thing, all of their two movies combined, all those two guys, all the movies that they've made that I've enjoyed have one thing in common. They have R ratings, because for both of them, their comedic wheelhouse is getting funny people in a room and having them do dirty improv and then editing the best jokes together and putting them in the movie. They couldn't do swears, so they basically had nothing. Because they had no other mechanism. They have nothing else in their arsenal to do humor with, and they're not visual filmmakers. They don't have any ability to do jokes with like cameras and physical comedy. Since they couldn't do swears and they couldn't do dirty jokes, they were like, what are we doing here? And they had no actual comedy in it.
Sure.
There was one joke in the movie about queefing.
Right.
Yeah. And it was they didn't use the word queef. It was nothing anyone would have to explain to anyone. I think like the height of the sort of like, or well, the nadir of the sort of comedy that it is, I noticed they had an aborted "say hello to my little friend" joke in there. And I was just like, oh, we're still doing that. You're still throwing that in there.
What? That's funny. What if one of the ghosts was like, here's Johnny?
Yeah.
That's funny. It's good.
Well, I said to Amber after the movie, they should have swapped that line out for after one of them blasts a ghost, she should say, you are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Dude, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
keep good. It topical.
That's good.
But
what if there was a George Bush ghost and he was like eating banana and was like, ooh, I want oil.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah, no, I do agree with Matt here. There's a good review of it in Jacobin right now that just went out today. Very lucky to have read it by Eileen Jones. And it's called Fake Controversy, Terrible Comedy. And she actually touches on an interview that Paul Feig did where, and I'm just going to read from it very, very briefly. We test the shit out of these movies for months, going, is this funny? At the beginning of the movie, one of the first jokes was something Zach Woods ad-libbed about how this rich person's mansion is one of the earliest, most well-equipped mansions in the country. It included a face bidet and an anti-Irish security system fence. I was like, are people going to be offended by that? You know, like the Irish lobby, I guess, but no.
We were slaves!
Yeah, I don't know.
Peter King is picketing this movie.
Look, the Irish were slaves too!
He said, huge laugh every time, but I kept it out for a long time. I was worried people would be offended. We tested it and got giant laughs. We tested again, same thing. Here is someone bragging about testing all of their jokes before putting together something. Here's someone, like, just, you know, incredibly invested in focus groups. And this movie was created via focus group. And that's how movies are made now. And it doesn't have anything to do with it being, like, you know, a lady movie. There's a really good article that, like, it was written, like, 2 years ago that really should have gotten more traction. It's in Flavor Wire. It's called How the Death of Mid-Budget Cinema Left a Generation of Iconic Filmmakers, MIA. And you look at it, they just pour so much money into these incredibly expensive movies. And then they're like, well, this better make money. So we're gonna create this, like, mythical audience member, this amalgam of all these different focus groups. And we're just going to sell this comedy to that guy who isn't a real person, and we're going to make all our money back. And
that same risk aversion is the reason that instead of getting an original female centered comedy, we got a fucking remake of Ghostbusters.
Exactly. Because it's that's an IP why we didn't get
that
a new
people recognize.
Yeah, that's why we didn't get a new movie. And Will, what did we see? What were the previews we were looking at?
Yeah, like, this is it's to me, if you discuss a movie, you have to discuss the entire movie theater experience, and part of that is the previews. Amber and I saw a run of previews that were looked like the honestly the worst tripe imaginable. The best of the lot was a movie about a small British boy who conjures a monster to help him destroy things because he's angry that his mom is dead. And I think the monster is voiced by Liam Neeson. That was the best trailer we
but
saw.
But it was based off of a already proven best-selling young adult fiction, I think, series or book, I believe.
We saw some the Tim Burton movie that's based on another YA novel that's just like the Tim Burton X-Men. By the way, Tim Burton, stop making movies.
Stop
for
it. You
yeah,
ran
get
out.
It over with.
You're out of juice.
I mean, and the thing is, he's been out for a really long time.
Yeah,
so
and he's
at this
still
point,
doing
it's
it.
Brutal. Yeah.
The only one we saw that could possibly be tagged as original was the Clint Eastwood directed Tom Hanks starring Sully, the pilot movie, but that's just based on a real life
based
event.
On a real thing. No one's really making movies right now. But I mean, this is totally a question of political economy. Like, I looked this up. The budget for Lady Ghostbusters was $144 million. So far, it's made back $69 million. I'm sure it will
nice.
Make... Yeah, nice. I'm sure it will make at least $420 million.
but fingers crossed, $1,488 million.
The 1984 original was made for $30 million. And factoring for inflation, that's still under $70 million, like today. I mean, it's still a big budget movie, but a big budget movie then was... It was half, less than half the budget of this movie. Even the sequel, which had a guaranteed return, was like $37 million, which is like something around like $86 million by today's. It still was nowhere near $144 million. They pour so much money into these movies that they just like defang them completely until they're just completely boring and insipid. And it's not a pleasant experience to watch.
Wait, Amber, you said they spent $144 million on the new Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Okay, in the words of Sadie Doyle, friend of the show, her article
friend of
that
us
was
all.
Released today, yeah. Titled Ghostbusters is a Classic Summer Escape Film, but from misogyny, Sadie Doyle right. describes it as a fun little movie.
Yeah, it's a moment.
$144 like, million move, dollar movie.
Yeah,
with another $100 million in
I bought my tickets at
costs.
Etsy. Yeah,
it's like how the F-35 is like a cute little airplane.
She describes it as a tiny, imperfect, warm-hearted slice of joy, a diversion, a way to slip into an air conditioner theater during a brutal and depressing summer and feel, for a few hours anyway, something easy and fun exists in the world.
Yeah, just that's definitely what we all want out of a movie experience. Air conditioning.
Yeah.
Movie with air conditioning, as they said in The Simpsons. Movie with air conditioning. Also, that really isn't what they were selling before it came out. Before they came out, they were saying it was a revolutionary blow against misogyny.
Yeah. I mean,
and
it is a mammoth movie.
It's a fun
movie.
Way to hang out in the movie theater.
Yeah. And the campaign for it was massive and everything. And, I think the bummer about it is that the cast was super good. Like, all of those women are incredibly funny. And
they were all good.
Yeah, I mean, their performances were really good. Even the whole cast, too. The guy who played the bad guy, Neil Casey, he was great as well. They had really good people.
Hemsworth was surprisingly funny.
Not only that.
They just put them in a bad movie.
All of the bit parts in this movie were... filled by incredibly funny actors.
Totally.
Like you already mentioned Zachary Woods, who, in my opinion, is the funniest character on Silicon Valley. Matt Walsh from Veep is in it. Even the guy who plays Richard Spelt on Veep has a cameo in the movie. Everyone other than the original Ghostbusters cameos were
Oh, God, those
funny.
Are terrible.
Oh
the original
God,
Ghostbusters
they're
cameos
so
were so bad.
But yo, no. Will vouch for me on this. I did let out a little gasp of delight when I saw Annie Potts.
I
did kind of lose it. So, like, the original
Annie Potts
girl
is Janine. She was Janine. She was
Janine
their secretary.
Janine Melnitz, man.
In the original Ghostbusters. And Amber, you said a good
Janine
thing.
Janine Melnitz from my staff.
No, I love Janine. And, like, I'm growing up, I was like, part of the reason I am on here is because, you know, I am a feminist and I am a serious cultural critic. But also, like, I really love Ghostbusters. It is, like, my flu movie. Like, you know, when you get sick and you watch the movie you watched as a kid. Like Ghostbusters is the movie that I pop on, and it's imperfect, but whatever. I am nostalgic for it.
Let me put that into understandable terms for the listeners to our show. You know how when you guys get sick or you're in a bad mood, you watch the ISIS Jordanian pilot video? That's what Amber does with Ghostbusters.
That's what I do with both of them. But I saw Janine, and I actually legit got excited. I saw Annie Potts, who did an amazing job in both movies playing Janine. And I'm sure as a kid I wanted to be like a Ghostbuster or whatever, and I played Ghostbusters. But the secretary character, who is the you know, second like major female character to Sigourney Weaver's Data Barrett, she is the person I identified with because she was just like lazy, sassy, and horny. Like,
she's
all
a real feminist
wanted
hero.
To do, all Janine wanted to do.
Some people think I'm too intellectual, but it's a fantastic way to spend your spare time.
All she wanted to do was just, like, get paid, talk shit,
and get laid.
Look cute, and hit on Jewish men with advanced degrees. And I don't like to throw around the word hero too much, but if there is a feminist hero in the series for me, it's Janine Melnitz.
And if I may interject from a male gaze perspective, Janine in Ghostbusters 2,
oh yeah,
a dime.
With the bob.
Oh my god, a dime.
Yeah, no, I totally. That actually like solidified something for me when my boyfriend was like, oh yeah, but the secretary. I was like, yeah, okay, you get it. We're on the same level here. She's my vibe. You get my vibe. Yeah.
Milo Yiannopoulos, with tens of millions of Twitter followers, they're now using you. Literally, I can't believe this is happening. While this coup against the media happens, Fox News has a coup taking it over. Drudge has warned everybody that the Supreme Court justice told him now is the time they're coming after free speech. He warned a year ago. It's now happening on this show. And I think this interview is, you know, up there in importance because this is the day after you've been banned, lifetime ban. And they say under these UN rules, anybody will be banned on the internet, period, if you've been shown to be hateful for making fun of the abominable Ghostbusters movie. So,
but yeah, no, mostly the cameos were quite bad.
Oh god, the Bill Murray one wanted me to fucking burn the theater down. It was so bad.
They never really established whether he died or not.
Like, yeah, what the hell?
Okay, so for people who haven't seen the film, i.e. Felix hasn't seen the movie, and what Felix is doing for the purposes of this show is filling the role that Ernie Hudson did in the original Ghostbusters, where
right.
He is he's the figure who's the outsider, who doesn't know about Ghostbusting.
Wait, fun fact, but, because I know this trivia, they originally wanted to write Ernie Hudson as another scientist, but decided they needed a layman to explain different things to the audience.
All right, so guys, for listeners, for you guys, I was not able to see Ghostbusters. I'm not able to go to the movie theater because, well, me and a big group of friends, we had a run-in with a woman named N and her son, and there was a misunderstanding. Asking you guys my questions about the movie because I can't see it. I've also converted to Salafist Islam. I cannot see images. Sorry. Movies are bad.
Haram.
Haram. Okay. All right. What I want to know first. So, how do they alter the plot to make it, like, you know, yas, clap back, and side eye, though?
Okay, there was a moment when they tried to, like, cover the origin of, like, their interest in the paranormal, and, which is interesting, because they didn't really do that for the original series, and they ask Kristen Wiig's character, like, you know, what happened? Why did you get, how did you get interested in the paranormal? And she's like, oh, I was visited by a ghost, and her parents wouldn't believe her, and they sent her to shrinks. And it was very believe women. It yeah. was totally that.
Yeah, you gotta believe that.
Also, the villain is basically a basement incel.
No, the, like yeah, villain yeah. of the movie, the villain of the movie is Gamergate.
Yeah.
And yeah. This is where I think we should get into the, well, they, the close reading of the film that, that only Chapo can provide for you.
Yeah.
We can break it down for you because, okay.
You don't have to read that close. I'm sorry.
You don't have
it's
to
a
read
l-
that.
It's a little
yeah, they put that shit right on the surface.
At one point, they're literally reading YouTube comments. And someone says something sexist. It's pretty heavy handed.
Yeah, they yeah. read it and it so, says like bitches can't be busting ghosts.
I love
that was actually one of the three or four gags in the movie that I thought landed. But
not
here's what I'll say. We established early on that much of this kind of controversy over the movie was a very clever and cynical marketing ploy to get people to talk about and promote the movie for free. That being said, the small cadre of bereaved nerds who are angry at the Lady Ghostbusters have a right to be angry because this movie was an ideological assault on their very existence. We'll start with the villain of the movie, who, as Matt said, is Gamergate.
Yeah.
He is a... just
Neil
a
Casey,
of,
he did a great job.
He's a sad, doughy nerd, convinced of his own genius, bent on exacting revenge on a world that has shunned him by releasing ghosts and helping to bring about the ghost apocalypse. Here's the other thing. The other thing with that character is the other lead in the movie, Chris Hemsworth, in another bit of sort of feminist casting, plays the dumb bimbo who becomes their secretary. And the running joke with him is that he's really good-looking and stupid throughout yeah. the entire movie.
In yeah, he did a decent job, too. The weird thing is about this funny. Is that all of these people are pretty good at their job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, spoiler alert, you know, towards the end of the movie, the ghost of the bad guy possesses Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, because he needs more screen time. He had big
yeah,
name.
He needs more... And the jokes from that point on become about... You know, he's like, oh, I should have worked out more when I was alive. Hey, this is what it likes. This is what it feels like to have upper body strength and be sexually attractive to women. Ooh. You know, so that was just another dig at the type of person who's angry at Ghostbusters. You know, the Milo Yabba-Dabba-Duopolis fan who's, you know, seething
over this
movie.
I mean, far be it for me to find plot holes in a Ghostbusters movie because, like, they've always been full of plot holes. But why did when he was possessed... By the bad guy still have an Australian accent that irked me just a little bit.
Well, Amber, when you take control of when you're in a ghost state, when you're in the ectoplasm state,
you kind of are already in a way.
If you take control of a corporeal body, you are still using their vocal cords and Australian cranium.
Right, and they actually do have support for that because he. Possesses Hemsworth, and Hemsworth is next to a motorcycle, and he says, I hope this guy knows how to ride a motorcycle.
Right.
So he does have to access his brain.
Now, as Amber has already mentioned, the other not-so-covert line of ideological propaganda in this movie is the subplot that nobody believed Kristen Wiig's character when she was a girl, that a ghost was haunting her for about a year as a child. And people gaslit her, and that's why she tried to hide her belief. In the beginning of the movie, she is trying to get tenure at Columbia University and is hiding the fact that she once mm-hmm. was a ghost scientist. But then she reconnects with her childhood friend, Melissa McCarthy, who is a proud ghost girl and ghost scientist. And it's sort of about how Kristen Wiig has to come back to believing in herself... And via you, the audience needs yep. to believe in her as well. But for me, the scene in the movie that is where the ideology most clearly reveals itself is in sort of the pseudo action movie climax of the movie, where the four Ghostbusters sort of have to fight their way through a haunted uh-huh. Times Square.
It sucks. It's terrible. It's some of the worst directed, shittiest, affected Disney's haunted filmmaking mansion. I have ever seen.
It looks so bad.
How the fuck did Ghostbusters have better special effects 30 years ago?
This is actually the one thing I disagree with, with Eileen Jones's Jacobin thing, where she said, it echoed the 90s neon. No, the original Ghostbusters, very dark, very dirty. Even the special effects, not neon-y. They look great.
Yeah, you remember how gross those dogs look like? Man, they scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
I mean, there's just absolutely nothing in this movie. Compare the original Slimer to the shitty Slimer so that they have in this movie. They both eat hot dogs, and when Slimer eats hot dogs, he pops out of the guy's cart and they're like gnashing around in his mouth. It's got a visceral reality to it. This CGI douchebag eating CGI hot dogs. It just has no corporeality to it at all. It's terrible.
Wait. Another line of ideological assault in this movie. There's a lady Slimer in this movie as well.
Slimer gets to smash.
Wait, sorry. Digression. This is in the entire Ghostbusters universe. What was Slimer before he died?
Don't think too hard on it.
I heard a theory online that he was Andrew Breitbart.
Nice.
I think there might be something to that.
I don't know. Wait, Will, we sidetracked from the fight.
So the action movie climax of this movie, like I said, is the Ghost Girls have to fight their way through a haunted Times Square, and they're using their proton accelerators to blast a whole bunch of ghosts,
which doesn't make sense, by the way. Just another digression. They used their proton packs to basically kill the ghosts.
Which is upsetting to me in the ghost science consistency. You trap them. Yes, thank you.
You trap them. You don't kill them. And the thing is that they trapped them earlier in the movie. It's not like they decided to change it for this movie where now we're killing the ghosts with the proton pack. They were catching them merely scenes earlier
with the movie. Thank you.
It's insane. It's awful.
Madness.
Once again. In this sequence, they're fighting a bunch of ghosts. Now, and throughout it, there is a giant ghost that is sort of directing all of the other ghosts. And that ghost is a giant, ghoulish Uncle Sam, who is the avatar of ghost patriarchy and masculinity. My gut. And what he's doing is he is sending wave after wave of smaller ghosts at them. Smaller ghosts that include a pilgrim, an executed convict, a hobo of some kind.
Revolutionary War soldier?
Probably a 9/11 firefighter.
I ain't getting busted by no lady. Hey, I have the dust all over me.
All of these archetypes of masculinity.
All of these are archetypes.
You call this ghost pizza? Forget about it.
Hey!
A pirate, a hobo, and so on and so on. These are the avatars of traditional ghost masculinity that are literally being popped by the lady Ghostbusters as they make their way to the giant building that's haunted. That's also a phallic symbol.
Because if that's not enough, what just happened there, at the very end of the movie, the head ghost, the incel Gamergate
ghost.
It becomes a giant version of the ghost from the Ghostbusters logo, and he's stalking towards them, and they're trying to like suck him into this vortex with their proton packs, which now, or they have this there's something pulling them towards this vortex, but he's holding like the sides of buildings so that he can't be pulled in, and so to get him to move his ghost arms so that it'll suck him into the vortex, they shoot him in the dick.
Yep.
But right in the groin.
But
clap back, baby.
But I mean, let's talk about he's a giant ghost. I was watching for research, because I take this very seriously. All of my podcast appearances I take very seriously. I was rewatching one last night with a friend, and it gets to the end, and it's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which is, by the way, genius. It's like they invented a very believable brand, you know, and like a cutesy brand, and then made it menacing and made it like a kaiju monster attacking the city.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome.
It was
awesome.
Great, and it's also kind of hilarious and ironic and weird and modern. And my friend who I was like watching this with was like, well, who's the big monster in the new one? And I was like, a ghost? He's like, yeah, I know, but like, what is it? And I'm like, no, it's like a big ghost, like a ghost kind of ghost, but really big. And also, it's the exact same premise. Choose the form of your destruction. And Melissa McCarthy says, like, a little cute ghost. And then it just becomes, like, a big ghost. So they, like, literally took the original premise from the first movie, but then couldn't think of, like, another interesting thing to do with, like, your subconscious that you would imagine or whatever.
It goes further than that. The like I said, the climax, it's an inversion of the original Ghostbusters. Because if you will remember in that, when they're on top of the building on Central Park West, the gateway is open, and they have to confront, they have to cross streams, you know, once again, like men
putting their dicks together.
Very phallic. To confront Gozer the Gozerian. Now, if you remember in that, Gozer was very butch. She had a flat top. And I believe
she was supposed to be based off of Grace Jones. They originally tried to get her for the movie. Before that, they wanted to use Paul Rubens and just make him the architect of the weird super paranormal building and make him this unassuming Paul Rubens character. But eventually, they went with like this weird Eastern European chick who looks like a white Grace Jones. Anyway, trivia for you.
I did not know that. But Bill Murray says, aim for the bitch's flat top, right? So at the end of the original Ghostbusters,
that's kind of what he said. It was, let's show this bitch how we do these things downtown. Aim for the flat top. But I digress. Go on.
who's the bitter nerd now, Amber?
I'm always the bitter nerd.
But at the end of
Ghostbusters, you're not the beer nerd.
At the end of the original Ghostbusters, patriarchal authority is reestablished. It is reinstilled over ghost femininity.
Right. And sleazy Bill Murray gets the girl, and yeah.
And in this movie, you know, and over and over again, you know, phallic male authority is cut down by four badass women.
Mm-hmm.
Now they could have taken this further in a number of ways that I think they blew it. I think they missed an opportunity. And just a couple things off the top of my head. At the end of the movie, as Matt mentioned, there's a ghost vortex, again, I think coded as being very vaginal, you know, that sucks in the big Gamergate ghost. Gamergate ghost, right before he is sucked into the vagina/vortex, grabs Melissa McCarthy and, like, you know, brings her down with him. Kristen Wiig sees this, she's like, no, I'm not going to let this happen. She ties a rope around herself and jumps into the vortex to save Melissa McCarthy. Now, I thought in this scene, when they're both sort of, you know, past the veil on the other side, they should have, you know, had some call-outs. They should have maybe been greeted by the ghosts of Virginia Woolf and Sylvia Plath. And they should have been like, fellow ghost girls, it's better over here now. But for the women of today, don't kill yourself.
Yeah.
It's better now.
We worked hard so that you could continue our fight.
Okay. Example number two. We haven't discussed this, but Kate McKinnon's character in this movie. Kate McKinnon, Woo! Who is a gay woman in real life. Her character in this movie is coded as being gay, but not in any explicit way. It's sort of obvious if you know about it, but it's never.
But if you're a lady looking for ladies and you were to see that lady, you'd be like, I bet that's an amenable lady.
Yeah. So they had this gay character played by a gay actress in this movie. And if they wanted to do that and be, you know, feminist, but still call out the original and give the, you know, the fans something to hoot and holler about, they should have remade, you know, my favorite scene in the original Ghostbusters, where Dan Aykroyd gets cross-eyed from a ghost blowjob.
Mm-hmm.
They should have done that. Kate McKinnon should have gotten head from a lady ghost.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That would have been a truly revolutionary film, but they just didn't have it in them.
Well, again, they kept it PG-13.
Exactly.
So the original Ghostbusters was PG, and Dan Aykroyd got head in that movie.
And they still said women, bitch, and yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that is sexist. That's the first real example of sexism that we found.
My favorite homage to previous Ghostbuster stuff in the movie is not any of the bad cameos. It's the fact that they gave Kate McKinnon the haircut and glasses of Egon from the Ghostbusters cartoon.
Yeah, something that so many gay women on my Twitter immediately were like, yeah, I liked that cartoon as a girl.
Well, it gave me some things some to feelings. Ponder because after I saw, because when I first saw Kate McKinnon in the in her Ghostbusters ensemble and hairstyle, I was like, "Damn!" So that makes me wonder: did I want to fuck Egon when I was a kid?
I think you did. Yeah,
almost certainly. Yes.
Well, I okay. don't want to overstate like the significance or you know whatever like the. The literary resonance of Ghostbusters. I do think people kind of went, and I like legitimately loved this movie as a kid. I watched it obsessively. It's, I think it was like the first thing I ordered when I got like my Amazon Prime account. But it's an extremely reactionary movie. I mean, like,
oh hell yeah,
Harold Ramis's sort of like I think fantasy audience. I mean, you think about it. These are guys, they're academics. They get laid off, and then they become these blue-collar, you know, guys with who wear jumpsuits and have their names printed on them. And then these, you know, these guy, this guy from the EPA shows up, and he's busting their balls. And then go even further, and in the sequel, they did their job too well, and now the city no longer needs American auto manufacturing. I mean, Ghostbusters. And, yeah.
Amber, that's my favorite part about, I think, the underrated Ghostbusters 2, is that when Ghostbusters 2 begins, all of the Ghostbusters are, like, semi-retired, working bullshit jobs, sort of feeding off their semi-ghostbusting fame, where it's just like, hey, remember a year ago when we participated in the, we're at the center of the single most profound event in all of human history?
But nobody believes
people
in
forgot
ghosts.
About that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. They go to the judge. First of all, they ask for a bench trial for some stupid reason. I don't understand why they had a bench trial.
Yeah.
And the judge makes a big deal about how he doesn't believe in ghosts. Didn't you remember the giant fucking marshmallow man?
Yeah. I mean, again,
middle of Manhattan.
The movie is full of plot holes and has been consistently. The only way I explain that away in my head is that there would definitely be ghost truthers, like, after the fact. And there would be, like, a mass denial of what happened. And there would be people who believe
it. Inside job.
Yeah, inside job. But yeah, I mean, it's a super like, sort of not terrible reactionary movie, but I think Ramis's like ideal audience was like, you know, what we call now the kind of like, you know, union Reagan voter, who, you know, there weren't actually that many of those people anyway. The working class didn't in mass vote for Reagan, but like those kind of people. And if you look at like sort of the working class sentiments of the movie, like that's the kind of reactionary appeal that it has, and that's what Ramis has always sort of like wrote about.
Now,
you never Thomas been out Frank. Of college. I worked in the private sector. They expect results.
I was going to say Thomas Frank actually in the Baffler, one of your home bases, Amber, mm-hmm. That had a very good essay about the sort of entire genre of 80s comedies, most of them either written by or directed by Harold Ramis, how this whole genre of comedies in the 80s, the slobs versus snobs movie.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters, Caddyshack, Animal House, a lot of them.
Platoon.
They're all very reactionary and proof positive. I remember reading something from Jonah Goldberg, where he said Ghostbusters was his favorite comedy because the villain was a big government EPA bureaucrat,
yeah.
And it was a movie that valorized the small business entrepreneur.
But I don't actually think they're that resentful. I actually think Thomas Frank he tapped into something, but I think he was really off. And this might just be me rationalizing it because I liked the movies. But, okay, first of all, they did start out as university professors, they're PhDs, and Bill Murray's love interest in it, played by Sigourney Weaver, in the first movie, she plays cello for the fucking symphony in New York City, and then she somehow makes that lateral movement to restoring paintings for the Metropolitan Museum of Art. You know, that familiar career path we all know and love. So like,
she has a degree in fanciness. It's transitional throughout all areas of high culture.
I love her apartment in the first movie, too. It's just, like, covered in, like, pink things, and it's just, like, super prissy. But, yeah, no, I think Thomas Frank kind of missed the mark a little bit. But the slob versus snob thing, that is that is Ramis's hallmark, and I do like it. And I also like, and I've realized this is like consistently sort of like my favorite character theme in like literature or movies, is I like movies about failures and frauds. And Ghostbusters was, you know, about failures and frauds. Like, either they failed or they were, like, Bill Murray completely full of shit. And there was no one... He didn't even believe in it. He was just electrocuting a guy for fun at some point. Like, it's a ridiculous concept. They're not particularly likable people. And I kind of wonder if they didn't want to make the women in Lady Ghostbusters too likable. There was no fraud in Lady Ghostbusters.
It's worse than that. Pete Venkman was electrocuting that guy so he could have sex with his girlfriend.
Was it insinuated that the girl and him were dating?
Yeah.
I think you're reading into that.
Okay, it's my own projection. Speaking of my own projection, I forgot the other thing about the original Ghostbusters. Remember the Rick Moranis character who's thirsty as hell for Sigourney Weaver?
Also, Rick Moranis... did some actual like major script contributions to the original Ghostbusters. He does not get enough credit for being like a really comedically smart guy.
Yeah, Rick Moranis.
Try to bring it to room temperature.
Definitely the funniest parts of the original Ghostbusters were his character. But it's like the whole purpose of the ghost invasion of that movie is like a giant plot device so that he can finally fuck his hot next door neighbor.
Yeah,
right?
he gets on that Sigourney Weaver. Yeah, and then again, he does another ridiculous, nonsensical lateral movement in the second movie where he goes from CPA to lawyer. Like, they just don't care about consistency.
He has a degree in Jew. See?
Which is why eventually Janine gets up on that. She loves the Jewish men.
Once again, hero.
She's a hero. I love her so much.
In summary, I'm going to be a little bit easier on this movie than Matt and Amber. I walked out of the movie and I wasn't angry, so I'll give it that.
Yeah.
I would say this movie is a comedy adjacent, side eye clapback though. There's about I think four, maybe three or four gags that were good.
Yeah.
But you know, and Amber, as we mentioned, we saw this sort of on a weekday evening in a theater of, like, kind of middle-aged women and their kids. Like, the most sympathetic middle-aged African-American women and their kids. Probably the most sympathetic audience you can get for a comedy. Most of the jokes
kind
just didn't
land.
Kind of fell
flat, yeah. Yeah.
It just... most of the things that were supposed to be funny, it just kind of...
I mean,
what was good in the movie was what the talent of the four leads were able to get out
totally.
Of it. But it just... There wasn't enough there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too hard on it. I just, as a feminist and as a writer...
As a feminist and the world's biggest Ghostbusters fan.
Yeah, and the world's biggest Ghostbusters fan. And as a writer, I don't like being pandered to. And movies are bad right now. And I want to see women making movies and in movies and, you know, women sort of, like, led and carried movies. But, like... It's one of those things where how significant is representation if we're being represented in just the worst kind of bullshit bourgeois art? I mean, I really to understand that is bringing a lot to, like, you know, a summer blockbuster or whatever. But, you know, here's the argument. Either you believe representation matters, and I tend to think that it matters far less than you know, sort of like the liberal... media thinks it does, or you think it doesn't matter. And if you think it does matter, women should get good movies and good parts and not just have to, like, reboot, like, nostalgia, you know, this nostalgia era that we're in right now, not just have to, like, reboot these things that have been, like, focused grouped to death. So they're like, well, people will definitely see this. And then just, like, you know, plaster it together after, like, years of testing. I think women can make just funny movies. I think we can all just, like, start making movies again that aren't comic books or young adult literature or you know, a reboot of something from our childhood.
Counterpoint, Amber. Quote, I didn't think about anything. except that a woman was getting the same big, slow-mo, blowing-shit-up scene a million guys have gotten, and the scene is awesome. I've always loved that scene. Women are treated as big, boundary-breaking, historic symbol of women aren't treated as a big, boundary, historic-breaking symbol of progress and equality in this movie. They're treated like people.
It's such Hillaryism. It's absolute Hillaryism.
I'm quoting Sandy Doyle,
that's Hillary exploding a wedding in Yemen.
Yeah.
It's a girl's turn, baby.
Yeah. Sisters are doing it now.
In the interest of equality, I haven't seen the movie. I don't know anything about Ghostbusters. I don't really know the movies. I don't really watch movies. I don't really process information that I see in my eyes.
You just kind of read the Quran.
Yeah, I just kind of read the Quran and I react to things. But it ruled. Bring on motherfucking Lady Deadpool, bitch.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to be too hard on it again. I think the cast is great. It's exactly the kind of movie that gets made now. And so it's not going to be good. Because the movies that get made now are bad.
The movies are bad. You don't have to get so invested in them.
Yeah, anyway, everyone should absolutely read that article about the death of the mid-budget film. I mean, this is totally a question of political economy.
We will link to that. We will link to Eileen Jones' review. We will link to Sadie Doyle's review.
Yeah.
That's violence. Don't do that.
Both sides.
Highly inappropriate ass.
Yes. Amber, thank you for coming on and analyzing the political economy of Ghostbusters with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Till next time.
See you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Mr. Jones, for honoring us with his presence. We have watched you as you have watched us. I have learned a lot from InfoWars and some of the wonderful things that you have done. We are two people interested in truth. Two people that live in the greatest nation on this earth, but the nation is not now what it could be if truth unfettered would be given to the American people, and perhaps through this dialogue that might happen.